Brown eyes lit with a sparkle, and Adrian was treated to a rare sight she'd bet few people had ever seen. The tiny, olive-skinned woman laughed and clapped her small hands to hear of her love and of her time with the hawk. She latched onto details, ooing over the nursery, glaring at her for saying Adam's name too many times, awing over their time together in Ooster, sighing over the wedding that should have been.
"Oh, finally! This is real story,"
Marie nodded. In 1514, the hawk was trying desperately to sleep. He'd heard a man could freeze to death if he fell asleep in the snow, but either it was too damned cold in that drift, or he wasn't quite drunk enough. He could remedy that. Shivering, he pulled his tartan closer against the bitter, howling wind. Stumbling to his feet, he teetered unevenly up the exterior stairs to the rooftop, knowing the guards often kept a few bottles up there to keep them warm while they stood watch. No such luck. No bottles and no guards. How could he have forgotten? The guards were all inside, where it was warm. He was the only one outside. He kicked aimlessly at the snow on the roof, then stiffened when a shadow shifted, black against the gleaming snow. He squinted and peered through the wet, swirling flakes.
"What the hell are you doing up here, Grim?"
Grim reluctantly abandoned his persistent survey of the falling dusk. He was about to explain, when he saw the hawk's face, and kept his silence instead.
"I said, what are you doing up here, Grim? They tell me you practically live on my roof now."
Suddenly furious, Grim retorted,
"Well, they tell me you practically live in a bottle of whiskey now."
Hawk stiffened and rubbed his unshaven jaw.
"Don't yell at me, you son of a bitch. You're the one who lied to me about my—"
He couldn't say the word. Couldn't even think it. His wife, about whom Grim had been right. His wife who had left him for Adam.
"You are so unbelievably dense you can't even see the truth when it's right in front of you, can you?"
Grim snapped. The hawk swayed drunkenly. God, where had he heard those words before? Why did they make his heart lurch inside his chest?
"What are you doing up here, Grim?"
he repeated stubbornly, clutching at the parapet to steady himself.
"Waiting for a blasted falling star so I can wish her back, you drunken fool." "I don't want her back,"
Hawk snarled. Grim snorted.
"Ha! I may have mucked it up once, but I'm not the only one who let his emotions interfere. If you would just get past your foolish pride and anger, you'd realize that the lass would never have left you willingly for that blasted smithy."
Hawk flinched and rubbed his face.
"What say you, man?"
Grim shrugged and turned away, his dark eyes searching the sky intently.
"When I thought she was breaking your heart, I tried to keep the two of you apart. 'Twas a damn fool thing for me to do, I know that now. But I did what I thought was best at the time. How the hell was I supposed to know you two were falling in love? I've had no such experience. It seemed like a bloody battle to me. But now, thinking back on it, I'm fair certain she loved you from the very beginning. Would that we all could see forward with such clarity. If you'd pull your head out of that bottle and your own stubborn ass long enough, you might develop keen vision as well." "She said she loved this smithy."
Hawk spit each word out carefully.
"She said, if you'll recall, that she loved him like Everhard. Tell me, Hawk, how did she love her Everhard?"
"I don't know,"
Hawk snarled.
"Try to imagine. You told me yourself that he broke her heart, that she talked of him while you held her."
"Shut up, Grim!"
the hawk roared as he stalked away. Hawk wandered the snow-covered gardens with his hands pressed over his ears to stem the flood of voices. He removed his hands from his ears only long enough to take another swig from the bottle he'd pilfered from the stable boy. But oblivion never came, and the voices didn't stop. They just grew louder and clearer.
"I love you, Shahak. Trust you. With all my heart and further than—"
"None of my falcons has ever flown my hand without returning,"
he had warned her at the beginning of that magic summer.
You were right about your falcon, Shahawk,
she'd said when she'd left with Adam. He'd wondered many a night why she'd said those words. They'd made no sense to him at all. But now a hint of understanding penetrated his stupor. Right about his falcons. Had his own jealousy and insecurity about the smithy so muddled his visions? None of my falcons have flown my hand. Hawk lurched to his feet as a terrible thought occurred to him. The day of their wedding, she'd been gone from his side for more than 2 hours. He hadn't been able to find her. Then she'd walked hurriedly out of the Brach. He'd wanted to take her back into the sweet coolness to make love to her, and she'd carefully and determinedly steered him away. They'd gone to the stable instead. What had she been doing in the Brach on their wedding day? He sped through the frosty garden and leapt the low stone wall, racing through the lower bailey. He threw open the door of the Brach and stood, gasping great breaths into his lungs. It was too dark with night falling. He went back outside and drew open the shutters. Not much light, but maybe it would be enough. Hawks stood in the center of the round tower, memories tumbling around him. Eventually, his eyes adjusted to the gloom. What were you trying to tell me, lass? His mind whirled while his eyes searched the floor, the ceiling, the walls. There! He crossed to the wall by the door, and there it was, in tiny letters, printed on the dark wall with chalky white limestone.
None of your falcons have flown you willingly, my love. Always yours. A.D.S.D.
A tiny leak sprang in the dam that had held back his anguish, releasing a trickle of pain that went on and on. She'd tried to tell him.
He uses no coercion against me,
she'd said. But coercion the smithy had obviously used against someone, or something, that Adrian cared about more than she'd cared for her own happiness. How could he have not figured it out before, that his cherished wife would have sacrificed everything to keep Dalkeith safe? Just as he would. That hers was a love so deep, so unselfish, she would have walked through hell and back again to protect what she loved. Hawk groaned aloud as memories tumbled through his mind. Adrian bathing him in a cool spring on their return from Ooster, and the simple reverence in her eyes as she surveyed the untamed landscape that was Scotia. Adrian's eyes glowing every time she gazed up at Dalkeith's stone walls. Adrian's tenderness and gentle heart hidden carefully behind her aloof facade. The bastard smithy must have found her in the Brach, or perhaps he'd been trailing her. Adam had obviously threatened to use his strange powers to destroy Dalkeith, and Adrian had done whatever he'd asked to prevent that. Or was it he, the hawk, Adam had threatened to destroy? That thought sent him into an even bleaker rage. So, his wife had given herself up to protect him, and left him a loving message to let him know what she couldn't risk telling him, that she would always love him. Her strange words had been carefully selected to make him wonder why she'd said them, to make him go to the Falkenbrach and look around. She hadn't been able to risk being any more explicit for fear Adam would catch on. She must have written the words only moments before he'd found her the day of the wedding. Knowing that she had to leave him to keep him safe, she had wanted one last thing, for him to hold fast to his belief in her. But he hadn't. He'd raged like a wounded animal, quickly believing the worst. He swallowed the bitter bile of shame. She'd never stopped loving him. She'd never left him willingly. Small comfort now. How could he ever have doubted her for even a minute? The bottle dropped from his hands with a thump. Shahawk James Lyon Douglas, most beautiful man and renowned lover of three continents, man the very fae might have envied, sank to the ground and sat very still, so still that the tears almost froze on his cheeks before slipping to the ground. Hours later, Hawk made the slow, sober journey back up to the rooftop and sat heavily beside Grimm. As if their earlier conversation had never been interrupted, he said,
Everhard, she said he used her for a fool, and she cried.
Grimm looked at his best friend and almost shouted with relief. The wild black eyes were mostly sane again. The jagged, brittle pieces of his heart no longer dangled from his sleeve. There was just a glimmer of the old hawk's determination and strength in his face, but a glimmer was a good start.
Hawk, my friend,
there is not a man, woman, or child at Dalkeith who believes she left you willingly. Either I can stay up here and freeze my lady crackers off trying to find a falling star, or you can do something about it yourself.
I, and my freezing nether regions, would thank you most assuredly, as would all of Dalkeith.
Do something, man.
Hawk closed his eyes and took a deep, shuddering breath.
Like what? You saw them vanish into thin air. I don't even know where to look.
Grim pointed to the smoky crest of Brahir Mount, in silence, and the hawk nodded slowly.
Aye, the Rom.
Grim and the hawk passed a moment staring silently into the swirling gray mists.
Hawk?
We'll get her back,
Grim promised. Chapter 33. It took more than a month of frustrated searching to find the Rom. They'd moved on to warmer climes for the winter. It was Grim who finally tracked them down and brought Rushka back to Dalkeith. Unknown to the hawk, recovering Adrian had become Grim's personal penance, and finding the Rom had been but a minor step along the way.
"Who is Adam Black, really?"
Hawk asked. Everyone gathered in the Great Hall and wondered that same question at some point during the strange smithy stay, and they all leaned closer to hear the answer.
"You Highlanders call his people the Dawin Shi. Adam is the fairy fool, the jester at the fairy queen's court."
Rushka sighed and ran worried hands through his silver hair.
"Fairies?"
Grim echoed carefully.
"Oh, don't go getting spooked on me, Grim Roderick,"
Rushka snapped.
"You heard the Banshee yourself the night your people were killed. You saw the Banyi, the washerwoman, scrubbing the bloody gown of your mother before she died. Just makes me wonder what else you've witnessed, of which you speak not."
Rushka broke off abruptly and shook his head.
"But that's neither here nor there. The simple fact is that the fairy inhabit these islands. They have since long before we came, and they probably will continue to do so long after we are gone."
"I have always believed,"
Lydia said softly. Hawk shifted uneasily by the fire. He had been raised on legends of the fairy, and the fairy fool, the Sansiric Du, was the most dangerous of the lot.
"Tell me how to beat him, Rushka. Tell me everything there is to know."
Keeping track of the past was an astonishing feat of memory, and not all of the Rom could maintain such exhaustive records in their heads. But Rushka was one of the finest lore keepers, and he was revered for being able to recite the ancient tales word for word, his father's words, and those of his father's father before him, back 50 generations.
"It was told to me as follows."
Rushka took a deep breath and began.
"There are two ways to be certain one is safe from the Fae. One is to exact the Queen's oath upon the Pact of the Tuatha De Danann. That is nearly impossible to obtain, for she rarely bothers herself with the doings of mortals. The other is to secure the true name of the fairy with whom one is dealing. One must then pronounce the name correctly, in the being's own tongue, by looking directly into the fairy's eyes, and issue one command. This command must be explicit and complete, for it will be obeyed precisely and only to the letter. There is no limit on the length of the command, but that it must be spoken unbroken, conjoined, never ending. One may pause, but one may never finish a sentence until the entire command is complete. If the command is broken to resume conversation with anyone, the extent of obedience summarily ends."
Rushka paused a moment, studying the fire.
"So you see, our histories say that if you look directly into his eyes while calling his true name, he is yours to command."
Rushka paced uneasily before the fire in the Great Hall.
"What is his true name?"
Rushka smiled faintly and sketched several symbols in the ash of the hearth.
"We do not speak it aloud, but he is the Black One,
the bringer of oblivion. He has many other names, but 'tis only this one that concerns you."
Hawk was incredulous. If he had only spoken Adam's name in Gaelic, he would have had it.
"That simple, Rushka. You mean to tell me he was so smug and sure of himself that he called himself Adam Black? A modern doof?"
Hawk echoed the name in the privacy of his mind. Literally translated, it meant Adam Black.
"Aye, but there's still a catch, Hawk. You have to find him first. He can only be compelled if he is present, and you utter his name via looking directly into his eyes. And they say his eyes can send a man swiftly into madness."
"Been there already," Hawk murmured absently. "Why didn't you tell me this when he was still here, before he took Adrienne back?"
Rushka shook his head. "Would you have believed me if I had told you that Adam was of a mythical race? That we believed he had brought the lass here for some strange revenge? Lydia tells me you wouldn't even believe she was from the future, until you finally saw her disappear yourself."
Hawk's eyes clouded, and he rubbed his jaw impatiently.
"There is that," he allowed finally, grudgingly. "But you could have warned—" "I did, Hawk. Remember, inasmuch as I could, the day of Zeldi's burial."
The hawk nodded soberly. True. And his mind had been so filled with thoughts of his wife that he had put his own desires before the warnings.
"Besides, even if I had thought you would have believed, I still probably wouldn't have told you. Compelling the fairy is a last resort. 'Tis a dangerous thing. With the fool's true name you may compel him only once, and precisely to the letter of your law. The fool obeys only exactly what you say. Were you to say, 'I command you to bring Adrienne back,' he would have to bring her, but she might be dead because you didn't specify in what condition."
The hawk threw his head back and let out a wail of frustration. Rushka continued,
"Or if you were to say, 'Take me to her,' he would have to, but you might be dead, or turned into a lizard if the thought appealed to him. 'Tis a very dangerous thing to try to compel the fairy fool."
The hawk rubbed his clean-shaven face and brooded into the flames, listening intently as Rushka went on. He sorted through the flood of information, picking and choosing carefully.
It could be done. Aye, it could. When Rushka finally fell still,
they passed a time in silence unbroken but for the crackle of the hearth fire.
"If you choose to try it, we still have one small problem, my friend," Rushka warned.
"What's that?" the hawk said absently.
"He's gone. How will you find him? I've known men who searched for the legendary fairy their entire lives, yet never saw so much as a stray kelpie, Hawk."
Hawk considered that a moment, then smiled.
"Egotistical, you say he is?" "Aye. Vain, obviously."
"Aye," Rushka confirmed.
"Prone to fits of anger and mischief was how I believe you put it."
"Aye.
And it would appear he came here, goaded by such a human thing as jealousy. Of me?"
"'Tis true."
"Good. Then I'm about to really shake up his nasty little world."
"What do you have in mind, Hawk?" Rushka asked, the faint trace of a smile carving his weathered face. The hawk grinned and rose to his feet. He had work to do. Adrienne raced up the steps at 93 Coattail Lane with more energy than she'd had in months.
"Marie! Marie!"
she cried as she plunged through the door, searching for the diminutive Cuban woman who'd become more than her housekeeper in the past month. She was now more like a mother and a dear friend. Adrienne had flatly ordered Marie to move into the house with her, and cautiously, the two of them had settled into the lovely rituals of friendship, the nightly teas, the morning chats, the shared laughter and tears.
"Marie!"
she called again. Then, spying Mooney, she scooped her up and twirled the bewildered kitten around the foyer.
"Adrienne!"
she appeared in the doorway, her eyes bright with hope. Marie measured Adrienne a careful moment, her shining face, her sparkling eyes.
"You saw him? The doctor?"
Adrian bobbed her head and hugged Mooney tightly. The cat gave a disgruntled snort and squirmed. Adrian and Marie beamed dumbly at each other over the kitten's head.
"And the doctor said?"
Marie encouraged.
"You were right, Marie. That is why I felt so sick. I'm having Hawk's baby, Marie!"
Adrian exclaimed, unable to keep the news inside a moment longer.
"I have the Hawk's baby inside me!"
Marie clapped her hands and laughed delightedly. Adrian would heal in time. Having the baby of the man she loved could graft hope into any woman's heart. The Hawk hired 50 harpers and jesters, and taught them new songs. Songs about the puny fairy fool who had been chased away from Dalkeith upon the sea by the legendary Hawk. And being such a legend in his own time, his tales were seeded great truth and staying power. The players were delighted with the epic grandeur of such a wild tale. When they had rehearsed to perfection the ditties and refrains portraying the defeat of the fool, the Hawk sent them into the counties of Scotland and England. Grimm accompanied the group of players traveling to Edinburgh to help spread the tale himself, while Hawk spent late hours by the candle scribbling, crossing out and perfecting his command for when the fool came. Sometimes, in the wee hours of the morning, he would reach for his set of sharp awls and blades and begin carving toy soldiers and dolls, one by one. On the island of Morar, the Queen smothered a delicate laugh with a tiny hand as strains of the new play drifted across the sea. Adam snarled. The fool had been gloating for months now over his defeat of the Hawk. Smugly, he had said to the King and to anyone else who would listen, "He may have been pretty, but he was no match for me, just a stupid, pretty face." The King cocked a mischievous brow, unable to resist taunting the fool. "Stupid, is he? Defeated, was he? My, my, fool, 'twould seem we named you thusly in truth. The legend of the fairy fool has just been rewritten. For all eternity mortals shall remember your defeat, not his." The fool loosened a giant howl of rage and disappeared. This time Finvera went directly to his queen's side. "The fool goes to the Hawk," he told her. Adam was in a dreadful temper, and the fool had nearly destroyed their race once before. The compact must not be broken. The queen rolled onto her side and measured her consort a long moment. Then she offered her lips for his kisses, and Finvera knew he was once again in the good graces of his love.
"You did well to tell me, my dear."
Sometimes, very late at night, Adrian would dream that she walked the green slopes of Dalkeith again. The fresh tang of salt air scented with roses would lick through her hair and caress her skin. In her dreams, the Hawk would be waiting for her by the sea's edge, her kilt-clad, magnificent Scottish laird. He would smile, and his eyes would crinkle, then turn dark with smoldering passion. She would take his hand and lay it gently on her swelling abdomen, and his face would blaze with happiness and pride. Then he would take her gently, there on the cliff's edge, in tempo with the pounding of the ocean. He would make fierce and possessive love to her, and she would hold on to him as tightly as she could. But before dawn, he would melt right through her fingers, and she would wake up, her cheeks wet with tears and her hands clutching nothing but a bit of quilt or pillow. Chapter 34. 1st April, 1514. He was near. The Hawk could feel him as he sat in his study, polishing a toy soldier to a smooth, sealed grain, while he watched the dawn move over the sea. A tingling awareness started at the base of his spine and worked its way up, heightening all his senses. The Hawk smiled darkly and laid the toy carefully aside. "Something wicked this way comes. Aye, and I am ready this time, you bastard." The Hawk crossed his study to his desk and rolled the thick sheaf of parchment, tucking it into the leather girth of his sporran. He was ready to use it, but only after he had the satisfaction of fighting the smithy on mortal terms. He stepped into the morning feeling more alive than he'd felt in months. "Hold fast and believe in me, love," he whispered across the centuries, because love and belief were serious magic, in and of themselves.
"Come out, coward!"
he called, his breath frosting in the chill morning air. The snowfall had stopped a few weeks ago, only sparse patches remained, and soon spring would grace Dalkeith upon the sea once more.
As will my wife, he vowed fiercely. For days now he'd been tense, knowing something was about to happen, feeling it in his heart, as the Rome sometimes suffered their premonitions.
Then this morning he'd woken in the wee hours knowing the time was at hand. The battle would be waged this day, and it was a battle he would win.
Come on! 'Tis easy to fight anonymously. It only tells me you're too much a coward to declare yourself and face me,
he taunted the misty air. He felt foolish for a moment, then pushed the feeling brusquely aside. Adam Black was near. He knew it clear to the marrow in his bones, goaded by the minstrel plays and a fool's weakness.
Foe! Face me! Cowardly, puny, sniveling whelp! I bet you used to hide behind your mama's skirts as a wee lad, didn't you? Quiver and taut from behind a lass, as you do now?
Hawk scoffed into the silent morning.
You used a lass as your pawn. Anyone could have played such a weak game. I challenge you to a true contest, gutless worm.
The breeze kicked up, more puckish now, but still no one came. The air swirled thickly in a rush of fast-scuttling clouds with black underbellies. Hawk laughed aloud, feeling exhilaration and strength course through his veins.
Mortal man knows the truth about you now, Adam, that you couldn't win my wife, that she scorned you for me.
Naturally, he omitted the truth that Adam had temporarily convinced him that Adrian had gone willingly. But the hawk had regained his senses, along with his belief and trust in his wife.
I know she rejected you, Smithy. I know you forced her to leave me against her will. She chose me over you, and the whole country knows it now.
Cease, mortal,
Adam's voice whispered on the breeze. The hawk laughed.
You find this amusing? You think to incite my wrath and live to laugh about it? Are you truly such a madman? For you are not my match.
The hawk was still smiling when he said softly,
I was more than your match when it came to Adrienne.
Face your executioner, pretty bird!
Adam stepped menacingly out of the dense highland mist. The two men regarded each other savagely. Adam stepped closer. So did the hawk.
Fair battle, fickle fay, unless you're too afraid.
This is what you called me for? A fist fight?
Take a mortal form, Adam. Fight me to the death.
We don't die,
Adam sneered.
Then fight me to the draw. Fight me fair.
They circled each other warily, muscled frames abristle with unleashed hostility. The violence that had simmered since the moment these two men had met escalated to a roiling boil. It was a relief to the hawk to have it out, to have it done with, and oh, get his hands on that bastard Smithy at last.
Fair battle is all I've ever done.
You lie, fool. You cheated at every turn.
I've never cheated.
Well, don't cheat now,
Hawk warned as they faced off.
Bare-handed. Man to man, you are my match in size. Are you in strength, agility, and cunning?
I think not. Adam shrugged indolently.
You will rue the day you were born, pretty bird. I've already beaten you and taken your wife, but this day I will seal your fate. This day I will destroy Dalkeith, until nothing but granite crumbs blow over the cliff's edge to meet the hungry sea. Your bones will be among them, Hawk.
Hawk threw his dark head back and laughed. Shrouded in the heavy mist, the court of Tuatha De Danann watched the fight.
The hawk is winning.
Silvery sigh.
So much man. See him move, fast as a panther, deadly as a python. Think not of him. He is safe from all of us now. So I have commanded.
The queen snapped on a frigid gust of air. A long silence.
Will the fool play fair?
Queried on the quiet, mousy fairy. The queen sighed.
Has he ever...
Adrian clutched Marie's hand and gasped aloud as she felt the soft kick in her womb. Somehow, it felt as if the hawk were near and needed her strength and love, as if something magical hovered, almost tangible enough to grasp with her slender fingers. She squeezed her eyes shut tightly and willed her heart across the chasms of time. Adam snarled.
"Enough of this mortal idiocy! It's time to end this once and for all!"
He was bleeding, his lip cut and nose shattered. Adam used his immortal strength to fling the hawk to the ground at his feet. A sword appeared in Adam's hand, and he laid the blade against the mortal's throat.
"Compact be damned," Adam muttered, balancing the razor-sharp edge flush to the hawk's jugular.
He cocked a brow and taunted the fallen mortal.
"You know, for a moment there I was worried you might have managed to learn something about my race, the kind of thing we don't like mortals to know. But it seems I was right about you all along, and my worry was for naught.
You are truly thick-witted. You really thought you could best me in a fist-fight?"
Adam shook his head and tisk-tisked.
"Hardly. It takes more than that to defeat my kind. Oh, and by the by, prepare to die, mortal."
But his threat elicited nary a quiver from the legend at his feet. Instead, the hawk arrogantly wrapped his hand around the blade and looked deep into Adam's eyes. The intensity of the mortal's gaze latched onto Adam's and held with a strength all its own. Adam tensed, and a flicker of uncertainty flashed across his face. Hawk smiled.
"Amadon Duv, I compel you thusly."
Adam froze and his jaw dropped, belying a very human expression of astonishment. The sword melted from his hand as the words of the ancient ritual of binding mired him tightly.
"You can't do this!" Adam spit out.
But the hawk could, and did. Adam growled low in his throat. It was not a human sound at all. 20 minutes later, Adam was gaping in disbelief. The hawk had actually unrolled a parchment scroll from his sporran and was reading a very long, very specific list of demands.
"And you will never come near Dalkeith upon the sea again,"
Adam shuddered.
"Are you almost done, pretty bird?"
The hawk continued without interruption, unrolling his scroll farther.
"Did you write a goddamn book? You can't do it like this,"
Adam said through gritted teeth.
"You get one command. You can't read that whole thing."
Hawk almost laughed aloud. The trickery would begin now. Any loophole the fickle fairy could find, he would try to use. But the hawk hadn't left any loopholes. He kept reading.
"I said give it up, you infantile, mewling mass of mortality. It won't work."
"And you will never," Hawk continued. Adam snarled and raged, his icy face turning whiter.
"I will curse your children, your children's children. I will curse Adrienne and all her children,"
Adam dangled evilly. Hawk stiffened and paused. His eyes flew to Adam's. Adam stifled a snicker of glee, certain that the hawk would slip and break his command. Hawk's lips drew back in a fierce snarl.
"And you will never seek to lay a curse upon my family, my seed, myself, or the family, seed or self of anyone I command you to forsake, or any Douglas commands you to forsake, including Adrienne, with Douglas being expressly defined as any relative by direct blood tie, marriage, or adoption, seed being defined as progeny, children adopted or otherwise obtained. You will not harm any animal belonging to—"
Adam paced a stunted space of earth, fear now evident in his every step.
"Obedience being defined as, and when you return, Adrienne, to me, all will be in order at Dalkeith upon the sea. The hawk and all his people being protected from any harm, alive and in the best of health with no tricks played. And Adrienne will be bringing her cat safely back through time with her. And—"
Adam's face, once beautiful, was a livid mask of hate.
"I will not lose. I will find a way to defeat you, Hawk."
"And you will forego any thoughts or actions of revenge against the Douglas." Adam waved his hand, and Adrienne appeared, looking utterly stunned, clutching a clawing cat in her arms. The Hawk shuddered imperceptibly, knowing this was just one more trick by Adam to get him to break his command. 5 months. 5 horrible, heartless months without a glimpse of his beloved's face, and now she stood before him, breathtakingly, heart-wrenchingly lovely. Hawk's gaze rested hungrily on her face, her silvery mane, her lush body, her round belly. Her round belly! His eyes flew to Adrienne's, wide with astonishment and awe, as a violent possessiveness rocked his frame. His child! His daughter or son! Blood of his blood! His and Adrienne's! Adrienne was pregnant. Hawk was speechless. Adam grinned wickedly, and the hawk saw it. He would not lose Adrienne. He had too much to read yet. With iron force of will, Hawk averted his eyes from his beloved wife. It was the hardest thing he'd ever done in his entire life. Adrienne's eyes devoured him. She was afraid to interrupt, afraid to move. Somehow, she'd been miraculously yanked right out of her library. And Mooney, who'd been across the room by the fire, was curled snugly in her arms. She could still see Marie's startled face fading before her eyes. And there was the hawk, beloved husband and life itself.
"How could you resist me, beauty?"
Adam was suddenly the smithy again, kilt clad and glistening.
"I am every bit as beautiful as the hawk, and can please you in ways you can't even dream. I could turn you inside out and make you weep with ecstasy. How could you forsake me?"
"I love my husband."
She'd spent many months clinging to the hope of the hawk's child growing inside her, and studying everything about Celtic lore she could get her hands on, in hopes of finding a way back. But the hawk, it seemed, had found it for her.
"Love! What is this love thing you mortals prize so highly?"
Adam sneered.
"Enough, fool!"
came a silvery peal of the fairy queen's sigh. Even Hawk slurred over his words, mid-sentence, at that voice.
"And enough from you too, beautiful man, legendary Hawk."
Sweeter than the chiming of bells, her voice was a sensuous stroke of heaven. But Hawk continued, without interruption.
"And as used in this command, the word person shall mean and include, where appropriate, an individual or other entity. The plural shall be substituted for the singular, and the singular for plural when appropriate, and words of any gender shall include any other gender."
Adrienne watched her husband, her eyes blazing with love and pride.
"The fool will obey me. I am his queen."
Hawk paused a whisper of a breath, not enough to break continuity, but enough to acknowledge.
"And besides, you're past commanding. You're pontificating and being positively redundant. Still, well done, mortal. She is safe. You both are. I will see to it for now and always."
Hawk continued. "All elements, conjoined by ifs, ands, or buts, or other conjoining verbiage shall not, when seemingly in conflict, operate in exclusion or limit in any fashion, but shall function conjunctive, overlapping, and allowing the broadest possible definition of the terms as used herein." The fairy queen sighed.
"Ah, I see. You will not cease this drivel until I offer you assurance. Clever man. You seek my troth. I grant it. You have the sworn oath of the fairy queen upon the pact of the Tuatha De Danann. 'Twill never be broken, lest our race vanish."
Hawk released the scroll, and it rolled shut with an audible snap. Only then did Adrienne see the tremor in his hands as he met her gaze, eyes triumphant.
"She has given us protection and fealty." His smile could have lit the Samhain bonfires.
His eyes swept her from head to toe, lovingly lingering on every inch in between.
"We're safe,"
Adrienne whispered, tears springing to her eyes.
"I shall see to it myself,"
the silvery voice lilted.
"Now and for always. Fool,"
Adam growled.
"Since I can't seem to keep you out of trouble, you have a new companion. Arne will spend the next 500 years with you. She will endeavor to keep you in line."
"Not Arne!"
Adam's plea was a shade away from a whine.
"That snoopy little fairy has a crush on me. I could spend my time pleasing you, my queen. Let me. You will please Arne, fool, or you will spend the next 1,000 years in the foot of a mountain by yourself. You think you're bored now?
With one last searing look at the hawk, Adam vanished.
Now, where were we?
The queen asked. Adrienne squinted hard in the direction of the voice. She could barely discern the shimmering outline of a woman hovering in the misty air behind the hawk.
Ah, yes. The two of you were about to have a wedding on the ridge by the sea. The fool has a beastly sense of timing. I shall pick up where it was left off. I, Avil, queen of the Tuatha De Danann, name you man and wife. Neither mortal nor immortal shall ever tear you asunder, lest they incur my eternal wrath. There, you've been wed by the Fairy Queen. None can lay claim to such a legend.
Adrienne and the hawk were still staring at each other across a space of garden, both afraid to move even an inch.
Well, kiss the woman, you big, beautiful man. Go on.
The hawk sucked in a harsh breath. He'd changed, Adrienne realized. Time had rendered him even more beautiful than before. She didn't know he was thinking the same thing about her. His eyes slid over her, from her silvery blonde hair to her bare toes peeping from under a pair of strange trousers. And then she was in his arms, folded in that strong embrace she'd dreamed about every night for the past 5 months as she lay in bed, her hand resting on her rounded belly, begging the heavens for just one more day with her husband. He brushed her lips with his.
My heart.
Your heart is...
Oh!
She lost her breath beneath his ravishing lips.
Ah!
The queen marveled. For even the Tuatha De Danann were in awe of true love.
You are worthy of what I now give you,
she whispered just before she vanished.
Consider it a wedding gift.
Epilogue. Adrienne breathed deeply. Nothing would ever compare to the scent of roses and spring rain, the unceasing roar of the waves against the west cliffs, and the splash of salt in the unspoiled air. She had ducked outside to watch twilight move in over the sea. Then she would return to Lydia and continue making baby plans. She smothered a laugh with her hand. Lydia had finally outright ordered the hawk to go away, complaining that she couldn't possibly welcome her daughter-in-law back properly and prepare for her grandchild if he wouldn't stop kissing her all the time. Not that Adrienne had minded. Like a chastened boy, the hawk had glared.
You have the rest of your lives together,
Lydia had remarked crisply.
Well, we women have only a few short months to prepare for the babe.
A few short months? Hawk had looked stunned, then worried. He'd raced off, muttering under his breath. Now Adrienne stood on the stone stairs, head tilted back, drinking in the quiet beauty of the velvety sky. A flicker of movement on the roof caught her eye. Grimm peered over the parapet at her, and his handsome face lit with a smile. She and the hawk had talked that afternoon, and he had filled her in on what had transpired, including Grimm's part in helping to bring her back. Only hours before, Grimm had clasped his hand to his heart and on bended knee begged for forgiveness for lying. She'd granted it readily.
"Hope you're not looking for a star, Grimm," she called up to him.
"Never again," he vowed fervently.
Adrienne gasped, as at precisely that moment a tiny white speck sparked and sputtered, then traced a downward spiral across the sky.
"Oh my God, Grimm, look! A shooting star!"
She squeezed her eyes shut and wished fiercely.
"What did you just wish?"
he growled down at her, rigid with tension. When she opened her eyes again, she said saucily,
"I can't tell. It's against the rules."
"What did you just wish?"
he roared.
"My, aren't we superstitious?"
she teased with a smile. He glowered down at her as she made her way back into the castle. Glancing over her shoulder, she flashed him an impish grin.
"Brace yourself, Grimm. I will tell you this much. I spent my wish on you."
"Don't you know how dangerous it is to be throwing idle wishes about, lass?"
he thundered.
"Oh, this one wasn't idle at all,"
she called cheerfully before the door swung closed. On the rooftop of Dalkeith, Grimm sank to his knees and stared up into the sky, desperately seeking another wishing star, just in case. Adrian's gown rustled as she slipped down the corridor. Lydia had told her where she might find the hawk, and, over tangy mint tea, had filled her in on a few things her husband hadn't bothered to mention to her, such as the fact that he destroyed her beloved nursery, the one she'd lain awake fantasizing about when she'd been stranded in the 20th century. So that was where he'd rushed off to, looking so worried about the scant few months left. She entered the nursery so silently, Hawk did not hear her approach. She traced her fingers lightly and lovingly over an exquisitely carved doll, and paused. He was kneeling beside a cradle, rubbing oil into the wood with a soft cloth. Clad only in the blues and silvers of his kilt, his dark hair fell forward in a silky wave. The nursery was aglow with dozens of oil globes, casting his powerful torso a gleaming bronze. His eyes were narrowed in concentration, and the muscles in his arms flexed and bunched as he rubbed. Adrian leaned against the jamb and watched him in silence, tallying the room's meager furnishings. Many of the toys were back, but all the cradles and beds were all gone. What phenomenal passion must have raged through him!
"I suppose I should feel flattered," she said softly.
His head jerked up guiltily. Adrian stepped into the room, conscious that her breasts, made fuller by pregnancy, swayed beneath her gown, and that the hawk seemed fascinated by the ripeness of her lusher curves. They'd made love that afternoon, desperately, quickly, and fiercely, scarcely making it from the gardens to the privacy of their bedroom. Lydia had patiently waited all of 1 hour before she'd knocked on the door and demanded to see her daughter-in-law. When Adrian had been trapped back in the 20th century, fearing she would never be intimate with her husband again, memories of their incredible passion had cascaded through her mind with bittersweet fury, heightening her awareness of all the sensual things she'd longed to do with the hawk, but had been denied. Those long, torturous months of desire, coupled with the demanding hormones of pregnancy, enhanced her daring now. She hungered for the slow, delicious loving she'd been afraid she might never experience again.
"Hawk!"
He gazed up at her, still crouched on the floor, ready to pounce if she so much as moved an inch. Adrian moved, deliberately and erotically. She stooped to pick up a toy soldier, bending so that her breasts threatened to spill from her bodice. She caught her lower lip between her teeth and sent the hawk a smoldering look from beneath lowered lashes. He was on his feet in an instant.
"Stop!"
Adrian raised a hand to hold him back. Hawk froze, mid-stride.
"What do you wish of me, Adrian?" he whispered huskily.
"I need you,"
she said breathlessly. He lunged forward, and she raised her hand again.
"No, let me look at you,"
she said as she circled slowly around him. She smiled when his eyes widened.
"When I was back in my time, one of the things I really wanted to clear up was a question about the Scotsmen and their kilts."
"And that question was?"
"I saw you mounting your horse one day."
"I know you did," he said smugly. "You were in the window by the nursery."
"Oh, you did do it on purpose!"
Hawk laughed, mischief crinkling his eyes, and it fueled her bold resolve. If he could tease her, well, two could play that game. She'd see how well he handled such toying with his desires. Stepping closer, Adrian placed her hand on his muscled thigh and stared into his eyes provocatively. His nostrils flared, and his eyes darkened beneath hooded lids. With her other hand, she tugged the bodice of her gown, freeing her breasts to spill over the top. She felt deliciously wicked, knowing her nipples were rosy, puckered, and begging to be kissed. When he leaned forward to do just that, she pushed him back playfully, slid her hand up his thigh, and wrapped it around his shaft, delighted by his husky groan.
"Nothing beneath this plaid, just as I suspected," she observed pertly.
"Adrian, you're killing me."
"I've only just begun, my love."
She wrapped her fingers around his magnificent arousal and slipped her hand up and down his shaft with a velvety friction. Hawk grabbed her hips and lowered his head to kiss her, but she moved her head and laughed when he buried his face in her breasts instead.
"Stop,"
she commanded.
"What?"
he asked, disbelieving.
"Step back,"
she encouraged.
"Don't touch me until I ask you to. Let me touch you."
Hawk groaned loudly, but let his hands fall from her body. His eyes were fierce and wild, and Adrian suspected he wouldn't permit her subtle torture much longer. She leisurely unfastened his kilt and dropped it to the floor. Her husband stood nude before her, his bronze body glistening in the candlelight, his hard shaft bucking insistently. Adrian traced a fascinated and admiring path over his shoulders and across his broad, muscled chest. She lightly brushed his lips with hers, kissed his jaw, his nipples, teased his rippled abdomen with her tongue, then sank to her knees, her mouth inches from his shaft, her hands splayed on his thighs.
Adrian.
She kissed the sweetness of him, stroking her tongue up and down his hard length. Hawk buried his hands in her hair and made a raw sound deep in his throat.
Enough!
He pulled her to her feet and backed her against the ledge beneath the windows. He swept her off her feet, deposited her upon the ledge, and tossed her gown up, spreading her legs to accommodate him.
Now, Adrian, I want you now!
He kissed her deeply as he gently but insistently thrust into her beckoning wetness. Adrian gasped with pleasure as he filled her completely. Hawk stared into her face, taking careful note of each shudder, each moan that escaped her lips, and just when she reached convulsively for the exquisite apex, just when she felt the sweet tremor begin, he stopped moving completely.
Hawk!
Will you be teasing me again like this, my love? He murmured.
Absolutely,
Adrian replied saucily.
You will?
Of course, because I know my husband would never leave me wanting, just as I would never tease him without completely satisfying his desires. So, satisfy me, my sweet Highland Laird. Take me till Valhalla, husband.
He laughed softly, then thrust into her carefully and gently, until they came in perfect tempo. The intensity of their union, so perfect in body and soul, made Adrian cry aloud with the wonder of it. Later, the hawk shut the nursery door and carried his sleepy, satisfied wife to the peacock room, where he held her in his arms through the night, marveling at the completeness of his life with her in it. Lydia smiled when she heard the nursery door close soundly above her. All was well at Dalkeith upon the sea. She paused a dreamy moment, imagining the wee bairns that would grace the nursery soon. Life had never been sweeter.
But it could be even sweeter still, Lydia.
Lydia's eyes narrowed thoughtfully on Tavis McTarvet's back as he stood pensively before the fire. A wave of guilt crashed over her as she recalled how he'd come back to her that night after talking to the hawk, and she'd turned a cold shoulder to him and retreated once again into the familiar safety of formality. The strain in his patient smile was all the reproof he'd betrayed.
My love,
he'd called her, and she'd felt so guilty for having love when her son had been so alone that she had refused to acknowledge it.
How much more time do you plan to waste, lass?
Very quietly, Lydia unpinned her plaits, freeing her wavy chestnut hair. Her eyes never wavered from Tavis's back. With a smile of anticipation, she tossed her head upside down, finger-combed her hair into tousled curls, then flipped it back over her head, allowing it to fall in a wild tumble down her back.
So many years.
She tugged nervously at her gown, studied his back another moment, then shrugged and unbuttoned a few pearl buttons at her collar. She took a deep, trembling breath as the butterflies took silken wing inside her belly.
Tavis!
She called softly. Once decided, she fully committed to not wasting one more precious moment. Tavis's back straightened, and he peered briefly over his shoulder at her. She almost laughed aloud when his eyes flew wide, and he jerked completely around to face her, his gaze roving over her wild mane, her loosened collar, her parted lips.
Lydia!
She heard 100 questions in his one word, and was thrilled by the knowledge that she finally had the right answer to give him.
"I've been wondering a thing. You see, old man,"
she said, patting the bench beside her.
"Those hands of yours."
Her voice trailed off, a wicked sparkle in her eyes. Coquettishly, she wet her lower lip in an invitation older than time itself.
"Eh?"
There was a hoarse catch in his voice.
being that they are so talented and strong.
Aye? His brows rose, his breath snagged in his throat, as Lydia made a suggestion for those hands that shocked and delighted Tavis McTarvet to the very seat of his soul. When Grimm finally left the rooftop that night and entered the great hall, he stifled an oath and scrambled in full retreat right back out the door.
In the hall of all places! Lydia! And Tavis! Ugh, love!
He grumbled to the stars that twinkled above him with dispassionate splendor. 3 months later, the healthy cry of a baby boy resounded through the halls of Dalkeith upon the Sea. Hawk Douglas, bursting with pride, sat at Adrian's side on the bed.
"Look at him, Hawk! He's perfect!"
Adrian exclaimed.
"He's not the only one," Hawk said huskily, smoothing her hair back from her forehead.
Adrian smiled at him. He'd held her hand through her labor, alternating between cursing himself and cursing her for letting him get her pregnant in the first place. But there would be many more such times, Adrian thought, because she fully intended to have half a dozen babies. Hawk was just going to have to get used to the process of bringing them into the world. Adrian touched his cheek wonderingly.
"You're crying," she whispered.
"Happy tears. You've given me a new life, Adrian. A life I never dreamed I'd have."
She gazed at him adoringly, their baby snuggled between them. Adrian could have remained like that for hours, but Grimm entered the peacock room just then, briskly ordering the guards about.
"Place it there, by the bed."
Hawk glanced over his shoulder.
"Ah, the cradle. I finished it last night. I suspect he will not be seeing much of it for a while."
Hawk possessively drew their tiny son in his arms.
"He should sleep with us for a time, don't you think?"
"I don't think I could allow him out of my sight. Could you?"
Hawk nodded his agreement as he studied his son intently.
"My jaw," he said proudly. "Just look at that fine, strong angle."
Adrian laughed.
"Stubborn angle," she teased. "And he already has dark hair."
Behind them, Grimm made a choked sound. Hawk glanced over his shoulder questioningly.
"What the bloody hell—"
"Oh, excuse me, m'lady,"
he said to Adrian.
"And pardon me, wee one,"
he said to the babe.
"But why did you go and carve this on the cradle, Hawk?"
Grimm asked.
"Haven't we all had enough of the blasted fairy?"
Hawk raised his eyebrows in confusion.
"What are you talking about, Grimm?"
He gently relinquished their son to Adrian and strode to the cradle. Flowing letters had been carved deep into the wood. The entire cradle gleamed as if it had been brushed with a sprinkling of gold dust. Hawk gazed a long moment at words he knew he hadn't put there. A smile curved his lip as he read aloud to Adrian.
"Remember this, mortal. You have your own kind of forever, the immortality of love. Blessed be the Douglas, Avil, Queen of the Fae."
We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of Beyond the Highland Mist by Karen Marie Mawning. Copyright 1999 by Karen Marie Mawning. Read by Phil Giganti. Directed by Laura Grafton. Engineered by Martin Wosner. Performance copyright 2007 by Brilliance Audio. All rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance Audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225, or visit our website at www.brillianceaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.